Reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 2, Ajamiyo, delivered by the Vishnu Dutas, text number 39. Iti jata sunirvedaha shana sangina sadushu ganga dwaram upeyaya Mukta sarva anubandhanaha iti jata sunirveda shanna sangina sadushu gangadhvaram upeyaya Mukta sarvanu bandhanaha
Mukta sarvanu bandhanaha
Iti jata sunirveda
Iti jata sunirveda
Shanna sangena sadushu
Shanna sangena sadushu
Ganga dwaram upeyaya Mukta sarvanu bandhanaha
Mukta sarvanu bandhanaha
Iti jata sunirveda
Iti jata sunirveda
Shanna sangena sarushu
Shanna sangena sarushu
Gangadharam upeyaya
Gangadharam upeyaya
Mukta sarvanu bandhanaha
Mukta sarvanu bandhanaha
Iti jata sunirveda
Shanna sangena sadushu
Shanna sangena sadushu
Gangadwaram upeyaya
Gangadwaram upeyaya
Mukta sarvanu
bandhanaha
Iti
thus Jatasu Nirvedaha Ajamiyo, who had become detached from the material conception of life, Shanna Sangena, by a moment's association, Sadushu.
Sadushu
with devotees Gangadwaram to Haridwar or Haridwara.
Haridwara
the doorway to Hari because the Ganges begins here. Haridwar is also called Gangadwara
because the Ganges begin here. Haridwar is also called Gangadwara.
Upeyaya
went.
Mukta
being free from
sarva anubandhanaha
all kinds of material bondage.
Translation: because of a moment's association with devotees, the Vishnu Dutas, Ajamil detached himself from the material conception of life with determination. Thus freed from all material attraction, he immediately started for Haridwar. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The word mukta sarvanubandhanaha indicates that after this incident, Ajamil, not caring for his wife, and children, went straight to Hardwar for further advancement in his spiritual life. Our Krishna consciousness movement now has centers in Vrindavan and Navadvipa, so that those who want to live a retired life, whether they be devotees or not, can go there and with determination give up the bodily concept of life. One is welcome to live in those holy places for the rest of his life in order to achieve the highest success by the very simple method of chanting the holy name of the Lord and taking prasad. Thus, one may return home back to Godhead. We do not have a center in Hardwar, but Vrindavan and Sridharma Mayapur are better for devotees than any other place. The Chaitanya Chandradaya Temple offers one good opportunity to associate with devotees. Let us all take advantage of this opportunity. Ma Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Parastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namane Namaste Sarasati Deve Gauravari Pacharani Nivishesha Srinivari Pachachare Sutarana Umangyanam Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chaksur Militam Jainam Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vanshakalpa Trubhyas Chakrapa Sindhu Bheva Shapatitanam Pavnevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. So now, because of a moment's association with devotees, Krishna Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, you know the phrase, Sadhu Sangha. So he had this Sadhu Sangha, the word is there, Sangha, which means go together, association, sadhus. Kshana means a moment, just a brief. So he didn't have very much time with the Vishnu leaders. That was enough. And therefore he had Jatasinya Veda become detached from his whole material conception of life. So think about that for a minute. He left. So at his dying moment, he's thinking of his son, to whom he was very attached. So much so that he was calling upon him at the time of death. So now he's been restored to life. And he said, oh, I have my son back. He just left. That's quite a change, huh? He actually left him behind, and then he went to the place here in the text called Ganga Dwara. Dwara means gate, the gate of the Ganga, which means the city, which was also called Haridwara, the gate of Hari, because the Ganga is begins there. And now the common name is Hardwar. Hardwar. That's the reason. See, Hardwar was Haridwara. So names change like that sometimes, shortened. So that he went there, mukta sarva anubandhanaha, being freed from all kinds of material attachments. So now he's going to simply live out whatever time of life he's been granted for the purpose of liberation. So he goes to this place of pilgrimage. And Prabhupada here points out that in ISKCON, Prabhupada has established center. You don't have a center in Haridwar, but there is one now, but little one. But the main places for us are Vrindavan and Mayapur. Have you been?
Yeah, huh? I've been also to
Hardwar. Oh, you did, huh?
Well, there is a Triveni there.
Yeah, that's right. No, Triveni is in Allahabad.
Allow what?
Yeah.
In Haridwar.
Haridwar also? What else? But that's where the Ganga is like. I mean, Gangotri is way up at the north. You see where it's coming out of the glacier, but then further down is Haridwar.
Yeah.
So other rivers come together there too. I've never been to Haridwar. So these are what is there, that these are places that are to facilitate spiritual life. So in the nectar of devotion, this is where there's an important discussion. The different items of devotional service, one of them is called living in Mathura. Sanskrit says Mathura Mandale, in the circle of Mathura, so that means Vrindavan. They're only 12 miles apart. Mathura Mandale, that place. So here in Nectar of Devotion it says, in the Padma Purana there's a statement about the importance of living at holy places like Mathura or Dwarka. It is stated there, to travel to different places of pilgrimage means to attain emancipation from material bondage. This emancipation, however, is not the highest perfectional stage. After attaining this liberated stage, one has to become engaged in devotional service to the Lord. Actually, we can understand that Ajahnveel was, before he went, he was liberated. Now he wanted further advancement. So, after attaining this liberated stage, one has to become engaged in devotional service of the Lord. After attaining of the Brahma-Bhuta liberation stage, one can further advance to engagement in devotional service. So this attainment of transcendental loving devotional service to the Lord is the goal of life, and it can be achieved very easily for one who lives in Mathura Mandala, even for a few seconds. So that's the statement in Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Bhuta Prasaratma Nasochati Nakanchati Sarva Sarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. That in the stage known as Brahman realization, Brahma Bhuta, the existence or the state of being of Brahman, one is Prasad Atma, happy all the time, joyful. Neither hankers nor laments, nasochati, doesn't desire anything. This is material life, right? You want this, you want that. And then you went, I don't have this, I don't have that, or I lost this. Hankering and lamenting. Savara sarveshu bhuteshu sees all living beings as the same. And that's a mad bhakti labhate param. One attains devotion to me. There's another statement. Mam chayo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samiti chaitam brahma bhuyaya kalpate. This one says, by unwavering devotional service, undeviating devotional service. Mam chayo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena by this bhakti yoga with it. Mind doesn't go anywhere else. Sagunan samiti chaitan, one transcends the modes and then attains Brahma-Bhuta. Then the other one says, one's on the Brahma Buddha platform, then you come to bhakti. So the one has to refer to devotional service in practice, and the second to pure devotional service. So on the end, one attains devotional service, and it should be automatically, as a result of devotional service, there should be liberation. And then this liberation is just a platform for further advancement in devotional service. It's not the goal. So this places like Mathura, Dwarka, Haridwar, these are facilitate this. Let the devotion goes on. It is further said, what is that person who will not agree to worship the land of Mathura? Mathura can deliver all the desires and ambitions of the fruitive workers and of the salvationists who desire to become one with the Supreme Brahman. Certainly Mathura will deliver the desires of the devotees who simply aspire to be engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. In the Vedic literature, it's also stated how wonderful it is that simply by residing in Mathura, even for one day, one can achieve a transcendental loving attitude toward the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This land of Mathura must be more glorious than Vaikuntha Dham, the kingdom of God. So then the next chapter, five potent forms of devotional service, is a list of these 64 different activities of devotional service. And then Rupa Goswami says that there's five kinds of activities: residing in Mathura, worshipping the deity of the Lord, reciting Srimad Bhagavatam, serving a devotee, and chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, are so potent that a small attachment for any one of these fives can arouse devotional ecstasy even in a neophyte. So you can find this where Rupa Goswami is being instructed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He says here, one should associate with devotees, sadhu sangha, chant the holy name of the Lord, nama kirtan, hear Srimad Bhagavatam, shravana, Bhagavata shravana, Mathura vasa, live in Mathura, and worship the deity with faith and veneration. Sri Murtira, this is in Bengali, this verse, Sri Murtira Shraddhaya Sevana. So those four things, Sadhu Sangha, Nama Kirtan, Bhagavat Shravana, Mathura Vasa, and Sri Murti Sevana. But it says here, Shraddhaya, with faith. And then it goes on here. These five limbs of devotional service are the best of all. Shrestha. Even a slight performance of these five awakens love for Krishna. Then it goes on, one should have full faith and love in worshipping the lotus feet of the deity. And then here, then it quotes from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, one should taste the meaning of Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of pure devotees. When it talks about sadhu sangha, association with devotees, is described here. That means hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. One should hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavata Artha, that one should understand the meaning. And actually, Srimad Bhagavata Artham Ashvado Rasikai Saha. One should taste the meaning of Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of devotees. And then similarly, one should associate with devotees who are more advanced than oneself. And endowed with a similar type of affection for the Lord. So Prabhupada says that one should avoid these professional reciters and mayavadis. One should also avoid those who are adverse to the Lord, Vishnu and his devotees who are mayavadis, those who offend the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, those who simply dress as Vaishnavas or so-called Goswamis, and those who make a business by selling Vedic mantras and reciting Srimad Bhagavatam to maintain their families. Nama Sankirtanam Srimad Mathura Mandalai Stiti. This is Bhakti Rasamita. See the Nama Sankirtanam, chant the Hare Krishna mantra, then Sri Mathura Mandalai Stiti. Live in a place, live in Mathura Mandala. Prabhupada translates and reside in Vrindavan. Then Prabhupada says in the purport, Navadvip Dham, Jagannath Puri Dham, and Vrindavan Dham are considered to be identical. If one goes to Mathura Mandala Bhumi for sense gratification or to make a livelihood, he commits an offense and is condemned. So it's not just going there. Whoever does so must be penalized in the next life by becoming a hog or monkey in Vrindavan Dham. So the hogs, the monkeys, the dogs, these are all former residents who committed offenses. So they still live in the Dham, but in that species of life. After taking on such a body, the offender is liberated in the next life. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta says, Hari Thakur remarks that residing in Vrindavan with a view to enjoying sense gratification surely leads a so-called devotee to a lower species. And then Bhakti, the power of these five principles is very wonderful and difficult to reconcile. Even without faith in them, a person who offenselessly can experience dormant love for Krishna. Even a person who's offenseless can experience dormant love for Krishna simply by being a little connected with him. That's why Prabhupada says in the purport today's verse, we have centers in Vrindavan and Navadvip so that those who want to live a retired life, whether they be devotees or not. Instead of one is offenseless, even if you just go there and you'll experience something wonderful. Retired life, yeah, it means like vanaprastha. Giving up family activities, and financial activities, just basically. People, when they retire, they don't work anymore, but they usually just try to enjoy. Well, actually, at that time of life, it's been for self-realization especially. Yeah, what else are you going to do? You're not young anymore. You have to do. Here in the nectar devotion, Prabhupada writes again, Sri Rupa Goswami has described Mathura Mandala. I remember the Lord standing by the banks of the Jamuna River, so beautiful, amid the Kadamba trees where many birds are chirping in the gardens. And these impressions are always giving me transcendental realization of beauty and bliss. This feeling about Mathura Mandala in Vrindavan, described by Rupa Goswami, can actually be felt even by non-devotees. The place is in the 84 square mile district of Mathura, are so beautifully situated on the banks of the river Jamuna that anyone who goes there will never want to return to the material world. These statements by Rupa Goswami are factually realized descriptions of Mathura and Vrindavan. All of these qualities prove that Mathura and Vrindavan are situated transcendentally. Otherwise, there would be no possibility of invoking our transcendental sentiments in these places. Such transcendental feelings are aroused immediately and without fail after one arrives in Mathura and Vrindavan. Then Prabhupada says, in these statements about devotional service, sometimes it may appear that the results have been overestimated. Only a moment, someone. Some devotees, as revealed scriptures give evidence, have had immediately results by such association, although this is not possible for all. For example, the Kumaras immediately became devotees simply by smelling the incense in the temple. Bilva Mangala Thakur simply heard about Krishna, then immediately gave up his beautiful girlfriend and started out for Mathura and Vrindavan, where he became a perfect Vaishnava. So these statements are not overestimations, nor are they stories. They are actual facts, but are true for certain devotees and do not necessarily apply to all. These descriptions, even if considered overestimations, must be taken as they are in order to divert our attention from the fleeting material beauty to the eternal beauty of Krishna consciousness. And for a person who is already in contact with Krishna consciousness, the described results are not unusual. So that's, then I picked out a few more places about this. Places of pilgrimage, Prabhupada has some interesting things to say. The Bhagavatam, pick them out. Just a minute. Yeah, so Prabhupada was very, very, determined to establish places for his disciples in Mayapur and in Vrindavan. And of course now they're famous, and everybody gets a chance to go there. But they are really meant for spiritual life, not for, as he says here, not for sense gratification, for renunciation. There's an interesting verse in the Bhagavatam, 1.13.11. My Lord, devotees like your good self are verily holy places personified. Tirtha Bhuta. Devotees like you are themselves Tirtha. Tirtha means a place of pilgrimage. Mm-hmm. Tirtha means, literal meaning of Tirtha is a crossing, where you can go across a river, a ford. You know, when you ford a river, you walk across, or a shallow place in the river where it's easy to get across is a ford. Sometimes there's a boat or a ferry, but it's an easy crossing place. Before bridges, there you can cross the river by boat or by even walking where it's shallow, a ford. Or driving across in wagons and so on, the fords. So this is a Tirtha, a crossing place. And some people take it literally because many places of pilgrimage, of course, are on the banks of a river. But actually the Tirtha means a place you can cross from the material world to the spiritual world. There's special facility in these places for doing this. But devotees are verily holy places personified because you carry the personality of Godhead within your heart. You turn all places into places of pilgrimage. These are their moving places of pilgrimage. And wherever they are, that's the places of pilgrimage. And so the Prabhupada said in his purport, the personality of Godhead is omnipresent by his diverse potencies everywhere, just as the power of electricity is distributed everywhere within space. Similarly, the Lord's omnipresence is perceived and manifest by his unalloyed devotees like Vidura, just as electricity is manifest in an electric bulb. A pure devotee like Vidura always feels the presence of the Lord everywhere. He sees everything in the potency of the Lord and the Lord in everything. The holy places all over the earth are meant for purifying the polluted consciousness of the human being by an atmosphere surcharged with the presence of the Lord's unalloyed devotees. If anyone visits a holy place, he must search out the pure devotees residing in such holy places. Take lessons from them. Try to apply such instructions in practical life, and thus gradually prepare oneself for the ultimate salvation going back to Godhead. To go to some holy place of pilgrimage does not mean only to take a bath in the Ganges or the Jamuna, or visit the temple situated in those places. One should also find representatives of Vidura, because he's being addressed in this verse, who have no desire in life save and except to serve the personality of Godhead. The personality of Godhead is always with such pure devotees because of their unalloyed service, which is without any tinge of fruitive action or utopian speculation. They are in the actual service of the Lord, specifically by the process of hearing and chanting. So by their actions, the pure devotees of the Lord can render any place into a place of pilgrimage. And the holy places are worth the name only on their account. Such pure devotees are able to rectify the polluted atmosphere of any place. And what to speak of a holy place rendered unholy by the questionable actions of interested persons. When we say, use the word interested persons, this is a little old-fashioned English. People don't understand it anymore, but it means they have some material interest in what they're doing. What they call interested person. So one who has no interest in the outcome is called disinterested. Nowadays, in English, this is confused with uninterested. Uninterested means you don't care. Disinterested means you're detached. Like you want a judge to be interested in what the case that's going before him, but disinterested in the sense that he has no, he doesn't profit one way or the other. If the case before the judge, he had a, involved some company in which he owned, he had some interest, then he would be disqualified. So when he says the interested, unholy by the questionable actions of interested persons who try to adopt a professional life at the cost of reputation of a holy place. So the holy places, unfortunately, they become filled up with people like this. Immediately there's pilgrimage, and then pilgrims come, and then it becomes, on the mundane plane, tourism. The pilgrimage comes and they leave donations and so on, and so one can take advantage of them to make a living. So people are beggars just for their material, or pretend to be devotees, or so on. And so the holy places fill up with people like this who are materialistic people. Even Prabhupada describes that sometimes women will go to a holy place where there are sadhus and try to seduce them, because they think that these are celibate men who have been practicing austerities, so that therefore their virility, their male power is very strong, and if they have sex with these men, they'll have very strong sons. So in order to have sons, they go to a holy place and try to seduce a holy man, a yogi or a sadhu, to have sex. So then Prabhupada says, because of this, there are men that go there pretending to be sadhus so they can have sex with these women. Here is his example of how the cheater and the cheated come together. Like a lot, and then a woman says, I was cheated. But what is her motive to begin with? What does she do it? So these kind of things go on. That's why sometimes we see so many things in Vrindavan and Mathura and Hardwar. They're filled up with these kind of interested persons who are just selfish interest. Prabhupada says later on in the fourth canto, he has a purport that goes like this. And he quotes this verse here that I just read, Tirti Kurvanti Kirtani Swantastena Gadabhita. He says, when a pure devotee goes to a place of pilgrimage, he desires to purify that holy place of pilgrimage. Many sinful men bathe in the holy waters of the places of pilgrimage. They take their baths in the water of the Ganges and Jamuna at places such as Prayag, Vrindavan, and Mathura. In this way, the sinful men are purified, but their sinful actions and reactions remain at the holy places of pilgrimage. When a devotee comes to take his bath at those places of pilgrimage, the sinful reactions left behind by the sinful men are neutralized by the devotee. And then he quotes the verse I was just reading, Tirti Kurvanti Tirtani Swantasteina Gadabhita. Because the devotee always carries the Supreme Personality of Godhead within his heart, wherever he goes becomes a place of pilgrimage, a holy place for understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is therefore the duty of everyone to associate with a pure devotee and thus attain freedom from material contamination. Everyone should take advantage of the wandering devotees whose only business is to deliver conditioned souls from the clutches of Maya. Yeah, because this verse says, this verse, both that you turn any place into a place of pilgrimage, and you make the holy places holy, because Krishna is in your heart. So Prabhupada explains how this is what happens. So the holy places can. So the point is, the real advantage of a holy place is the association with devotees. Proper association with devotees. And part of that association, see, the places like Vrindavan, they're holy because, and Mayapur, is that there specifically the Lord has had some pastimes there. And so they're good places for remembering the Lord. They remind you of Krishna. So one has to see these holy places through the eyes of experienced devotees, because Vrindavan, it looks like a in many places just like a mundane commercial town. And since I've been coming there, when I first came to Vrindavan, it was kind of a peaceful little village, but now it's turned into a city.
It was like
just
25 years ago.
Yeah, it was when I first. Yeah, we were out in the countryside. There was nothing but fields all around.
Yeah.
You know, and then especially when American devotees, Western devotees began to come, a lot of money came in, and then people, land became. And then what happened is these rich people from Delhi, they used to have vacations houses in Agra, and they became more and more expensive. So then they started building vacation houses in Vrindavan. And so then you just have completely materialistic people, and more and more money is coming in, and therefore there's more and more crime. Whenever there's money, it attracts materialistic people. It's very difficult. And so there's an overlay. Sometimes Prabhupada has explained that Vrindavan sometimes it doesn't look so nice, so that people who are just materialistic won't be so attractive. But you see, well, one thing, what you see with your material eyes, but if you actually are looking for Krishna realization, so it's another place. That's why if you go around to the place of pilgrimage, the wonderful thing is to have a devotee who can explain everything nicely in that association. But there's special potency, I have to say. Vrindavan especially is a surcharged place with spiritual energy, practicing Krishna consciousness there. It's said that that in Vrindavan or Mayapur, whatever devotional service you do is 100 times more powerful than done anywhere else. But also one has to be careful about offenses, because they also, and there's a whole list of dham aparad, you know, offenses against the holy dham. One has to be careful to avoid these things. The Prabhupada has also said that living in a temple, these temples that he's established all over the world, is also places of pilgrimage, because the deity is there, the devotees are there. And they're also functioning that way. That's why I established them. And we noticed that in America, when Prabhupada made New Vrindavan, there were so many Indian people in America that became the Tirtha. Especially they would go there for a Tirtha, for New Vrindavan. Even devotees from India, where the real Vrindavan is very close, they come to America, they want to go to a New Vrindavan. Because it's a place of pilgrimage. So just like Christians, you know, they all go to Jerusalem. You see them there all the time. So that going to pilgrimage to holy places is universal. In the Middle Ages, people would walk all over Europe from one holy place to another holy place to another holy place. Where they were, sometimes there's all legends about how Jesus was in Spain or Jesus was in England and so on, to those places, and also places where there were great devotees who died. And just like we have samadhis, they would keep their bodies and people would pray and get cured from diseases and so on. So they would go to these places for these kinds of things. Now, pilgrimage is very important. And originally, tourism was pilgrimage. Now it's just tourism, but before it was traveling to some holy place. But anyway, a devotee should actually not just travel there, but live there. That's the thing, is to live in a holy place. So if one cannot go there physically, then live in a temple. But the main thing is associate with devotees. And devotees are more advanced than we are because they are themselves places of pilgrimage, and they're the ones who actually make the place of pilgrimage holy. It's a startling description how all the sins pile up. Who purifies is the places of pilgrimage? It's the devotees. So this is Ajamil. Now he has a certain amount of time left. He's been granted a reprieve. You're free. From you don't have to die right now. Your sinful reactions are there, so you have some time of life left. So immediately, instead of saying I can enjoy a little more with my son or whatever, immediately leaves and goes to Ganga Dwar, the heart dwar.
This incident of Ajamila was taking place, he was 84 years old, right?
88.
88,
yeah.
He says, was it in different
yuga? That doesn't say what yuga it was. No, it doesn't. It may have been. Yeah, I think so. It may have been an earlier yuga. But he's described as being old. I mean, an early yuga, 88, is not old. So he's described as being quite old. So it sounds like, that doesn't sound like particularly, maybe some long time ago, but not. Because Prabhupada remarks that seeing this couple publicly having sex was very unusual at that time. But I mean, I can even remember 50 years ago it was unusual. You didn't see, you know. I mean, when I was a kid in America, you very rarely would you see like people do like it now, boys and girls hugging and kissing in public. It didn't happen so often, you know. And you could never find pornography. It was just like now it's everywhere. A writer recently described pornography as the wallpaper of our lives. So things are, even in the last 50 years, things have gotten worse. Like you could see steadily, things are more degraded. So, yeah, so Ajamil was, it said he was 88 years old. And even at that time, that was maybe life expectancy was longer than 100 years at that time. I don't know. But anyway, he got relieved of this. And so then because of sinful reactions, his death was not ready for death. And he immediately went to this holy place. And just so he could help concentrate his mind on the Lord. So it tells he practices devotional service there for the purification of, not, yeah, for advancement in Krishna consciousness. Okay? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.